Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello, everybody. Andy Burt here with a brand new episode of the Early Excellence podcast. This week, the podcast goes international as we chat to the lovely team at San Silvestre School in Lima in Peru. The team have been working with our very own Phil Armstrong and join me to share their inspirational journey. So here you go. Here's my podcast chat, my Early Excellence podcast chat with a lovely team from San Silvestre School in Peru. Hello, you guys. How are you? You okay?
Hi. We're doing great. Thank you.
Very good. Nice to see you. So let's start off with some introductions. There are three of you there. Let's go around the room. Let's have some introductions, please, if that's all right. Can you tell us your name and your role at the school as well?
Brilliant. So I'm Julia Martinez. I'm the head of early years here. And I've been here, I started in 2019. So it was a year right before the pandemic. And then we went online for two full years throughout the pandemic. And then the third year we started, but three quarters of the year was with face masks. So it was very difficult to teach.
Very difficult.
Now we're delighted. Yeah, absolutely. So now we're delighted that everything is back to normal. Jimena?
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm Jimena Ceballos. I am a teacher, early years teacher. I'm also the coordinator of reception that we call here preschool, and very excited to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Hi, my name is Cristina Dammert, and I am a nursery teacher. I'm also the nursery coordinator in the school, and I've been here for almost 10 years on and off, but I'm back since 2021, so I'm here and I'm very happy to be here.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And it's lovely to see you all. It really is. Let's then think about the school. So having talked about each of you people and your roles, let's get into the school itself. So tell us about the school. Tell us about your particular area of the school in terms of early years as well. Let's start with the wider picture. Julia, let's start with you. The wider picture in terms of the school itself.
Yeah, listen, San Silvestre School began in 1932, so it's been standing here for quite a long time. It was Miss Nelly Kufel who started teaching a small group of British children here in Miraflores, Lima, and her passion and outstanding teaching quickly became recognized. And then in 1938, the group was officially recognized by the Peruvian Ministry of Education. So since then, San Silvestre has been standing and it's been catering for girls in Peru. So it's an all-girls school and there's never been any vision of changing it into a co-ed school. Today, San Silvestre stands as one of Lima's most respected bilingual schools and it offers a unique blend of Peruvian and international education. Our mission of the school is to empower girls with confidence, articulate voices, and independence, preparing them to navigate a rapidly changing world with resilience, kindness, and purpose. So that's our mission in San Silvestre, and it's always been. And then in early years, I will go now into early years, which is where we all are in. Is early years section of San Silvestre is where it all begins with 400 and plus wee little girls ranging from the ages of 3 to 7. So we've got 400 plus children. And they embark in their educational journey in a setting built on warmth, creativity, and very high expectations. Because let's remember, they come from Peruvian-speaking families, and their mother tongue is Spanish. But as soon as they enter nursery at the age of three, we are the immersion section. So everything is done in English.
I see. Wow. Fantastic. Okay, so tell us about a bit more about the early years then. How is it organized? You know, so in terms of if we were to walk into the classrooms, or if we were to walk into the early years area of school, what do we see?
Okay, well, we do follow the UK Early Years Foundation stages, so EYFS, and then we transition into Key Stage 1 with the Chris Quigley Essentials Curriculum. And then the earlier section is organized into four key cohorts, which are nursery. We call it preschool, which is your reception. Then our reception would be year one, and our grade one would be year two. So that's what you would come in and you would see pretty much what you probably see back in the UK, all that in place. And all the learning environment is built very, very typically as it would be in the UK. The only thing is it's all self-sustainable. So each cohort has their different areas. And that's where I think Ximena and Christina can talk more about how it all works under the EYFS.
No, definitely. I'm really looking forward to hearing all about it, because I understand that you have been on quite a journey in terms of developing the practice and the provision within your early years rooms, within your early years setting. And so I want to hear about that journey. I think it's going to be really interesting to hear about kind of the starting point and how that's developed and how you've built on your practice. Okay, so let's go to Christina first, if that's all right. Let's go to you. So when you first came to the school, what was the provision like? You're the early years lead, of course. So when you first came along to the school, what was your first impression? What was the provision like? What was the starting point for you?
Yeah, so I think when I came to the school many years ago, that the areas were very similar. There have been some changes, of course, and we have modernized some of the areas, but the spaces for each of the cohorts were similar. We also had some areas where we call them not continuous provision. Now we call them continuous provision, but many years ago, we called them B areas that were in similar spaces. But the way we worked with the girls was different. The way we enhanced the areas was different. And I can take you back to that. But we use similar spaces. There has been some changes, but for example, the activities change every week. So we thought about what the girls need. We try to make connections between what we were doing in class and what we were doing in the areas. But these activities were always changing. So every week we proposed some new things. We sat down with the girls. The activities were guided, and we tried to see what the girls needed and what were their interests, but we plan the activities and change them very regularly. This has changed, I think, when we started working with a continuous provision and we started learning about continuous provision and investigating about it. We started thinking about, okay, the areas should not change. We need maybe areas to be closer to other areas. For example, like construction on Small World should be closer to each other. We started implementing some outdoor areas too, because before we had like, yes, of course, girls played with water and they had like sand to play, but it was more in a guided way and in a different place. And now it is part of our provisions. We have implemented like outdoor spaces and indoor spaces. These spaces are not in our classrooms, because we go there during that day to play there and to be there in continuous provision, but it's not part of our class. So we share the space with other classes of the same cohort. So girls of the same age group go to one area. And for example, in preschool, six classes share one specific area. in different moments of the day. But I think that's a big difference from before. And in this journey, we have learned and we have implemented these small changes, thinking about what materials we want to put for the girls during the year. And we know, at the start, what are we going to present? And then throughout the year, we start enhancing the areas and adding more things.
Yes.
Important also, like, thing that we are trying to make our best about, it's like less is more, no? So at the beginning, we start with few things and we teach the girls how to use them.
You build up.
And build up, of course, during the year and start adding more things.
That makes sense. I was going to ask you as well, how long ago is it since you started at the school? So when you're thinking about this journey, how long has this journey been?
I've started in 2013. So there was from 2013 to 2019, 2018, it was like away. And then after the pandemic, I think not coming back from that pandemic, like in 2021, 2022,
that period of change.
Yes, we started.
Okay. Yeah, I see. That helps. That helps, I think, for me to make sense of it, really, and to understand the times that you were changing and reflecting on the practice and considering it. What's really interesting from my point of view is that a lot of the things that you have talked about in terms of that starting point of kind of enhancing a lot each week, changing things each week, putting new things out each week for the children, trying to, in a way, overplan it, and to have different things happening every day or every week, is, I think, something that's very common, not just for you, of course, but actually certainly with many of the schools that I work with in the UK. Often that's a starting point, is that often staff become quite tired because they're swapping and changing things over such a lot. Often they start to get to a point where they start to question it. So they are putting new things out every week for a half term or for a whole term. And then they start to, after week five or six, they start to consider, well, has anybody actually used this in this week? And I'm putting it away again. You know, has anybody actually done anything with it? And we constantly try to come up with ideas for what we can put into these areas of provision, rather than thinking about the quality of what's always there. And really, it's that makes the biggest difference. And I think it, in terms of staff time, that's more effective as well. So yeah, it's really interesting that actually there are links between what you're saying there and actually what you're saying there, but also how that links to what I've seen in terms of practice in the UK.
Something that I would like to add there is the fact that our teaching perspective has changed also. I think it's more of a mindset. Before, teachers, it was teacher-centered, right? Even in our formation as teachers, it was all about what the teacher thinks, what the teacher decides, and now children get more agency. And our involvement in these play opportunities where the kids bring the new set of skills and the new concepts that they are grasping, it's more evident to us what they need. It's not a curricular decision, although it is, but it is more aligned to what they need and how they are playing. So it is, I think that before what happened is that we were these making decisions based on our expectations as adults and the way that areas worked. So precisely what you said, Andy, like they are not playing with these. Maybe I should take it. It's not interesting. And understanding that things that are set there in long term also mean that the kids get tired of playing with these, or maybe they're not interested. It doesn't mean that next week they won't be. And because of our expectations as adults in our interactions as well, we used to make decisions based on that. Oh, they're not playing with these. Oh, we've changed topic. Or now we're talking about farm animals. Now we're talking about, I don't know, the Peruvian celebrations. And we tried to, like, and it came also from a positive and nourishing space in our, like, as teachers thought it was a good decision at the time. We did not know better. And I think that trying to make the kids play in our rhythm with our calendar was a huge mistake. And now that we can see something different on a daily basis, I think that's very interesting for us as teachers to acknowledge our interactions in the play-based environment, and the way that kids interact with themselves, with others, using different materials, and having more agency in choosing what they want and showing us teachers how important it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And showing also what they can do, what they know, and what they're fascinated by, so that presumably you feel as adults that you get to know them better and to know where they're at in terms of their learning. You know, that stage of learning and development, you get to know that better because you are seeing them doing something that isn't given to them and set to them, but actually is something that they've decided to do and to show you. So I think there's a different way of finding out about them.
Yeah, that I think that you just hit it right on the nail. It's fostering independence. So when I first arrived here, one of the significant observations that I made was the high level of teacher guidance with minimal opportunities for independence.
Interesting. Yeah.
And now through all of this, it's amazing. I was just telling Christina as we were walking up here, I saw a wee three-year-old. She was playing out there in the mud kitchen, and she'd already gotten her bucket and whatever she was using in the mud kitchen, and she was taking it off to wash it and to clean it all up. It's something that would have never happened in the past. It's also a cultural thing. Let's not forget that here in Peru, children, like in many other parts of the world, have their amas, you know? So here we're fostering that incredible independence. And that's, for me, that's one of the most important things, you know, for the children.
Yes, absolutely. And you're right, that is a culture, isn't it? It's a culture of creating an environment, but also modeling and supporting and scaffolding the children within that environment and having high expectations, you know, expectations of tidying things away, of washing things up after you, putting things back to where they belong, getting things out yourself, not somebody else getting them out for you and putting them away yourself. All of those things foster that sense of value in the materials and the resources, but also it's a culture, I think. It's a culture that you build. I want to just go back a step, if that's all right. And that is could you kind of describe it to us? You know, so when you're talking about the continuous provision that you have, you know, the different areas of the room, the different experiences that you have, I know they're in different spaces, but could you kind of take us on a little bit of a tour, describe it to us? Would you be able to do that?
Yeah, of course. We each grade level has a uniquely designed space. Even though we have similar areas, right, in nursery and preschool, there are different, there's a different approach in the way that we organize and set things. We have mud kitchens, we have water and sand trays, although that's in nursery because in preschool there has been a more complex setting that changed a little bit the way that we organize things. We have in both areas, we have role play area, we have construction, and just like Christy was saying, like making decisions on putting small world next to construction because it just made sense, right? We have,
and by construction, you're talking about wooden block play, different shapes, different sizes.
We used to think construction what included other materials that linked with each other, like, I don't know, magnet tiles, links, waffle builders. And then when we had the consultancy with Phil Armstrong, he explained to us the difference and that was more oriented as a STEM approach, more like in math. And he told us that it should be more like wooden blocks or foam blocks that would help this less structured building, because the possibilities of things falling down when they click, I don't know, like when they match, like, I don't know, waffle builders, you don't get the possibility of the structure failing. And the girls need to see, like, balance. They need to see their constructions in a different way. And that was very interesting to learn about. We also have inquiry areas, which I think it has been, like, one of our greatest hits in multi-year levels, because they are these areas that are close to an inquiry-based learning, which is not our school's methodology, but it is part of our ethos, as in developing critical and creative thinking, and it's linked with our curriculum. So we both have that. We have math, literacy linked to our curriculum as well, and a creative area related more to expressive arts and design. I don't know if you want to, like, describe nursery, and then I'll describe
preschool. Yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
Yes, wait, I can describe, like, our nursery area. So if you are coming in and walking, like, around nursery, you will see the creative area that we have it, like, outdoors. It's not actually outdoors because it has, like, a little roof, but it's, like, away, and it's close to a sink. The girls, there's a table, there's a tap tray, there are some easels, and the girls are able to, they have different materials to be creative. And we enhance the area in different ways, like each week. For example, this past week, we have added like flour and salt and water. So they are starting to make dolls and they are starting to mix it. And they also have the opportunity that it's always there, that they have the paint and the paintbrushes and the papers and different like little things to create and make collages and different things. So that's creative. Then you continue walking and there is rope that is centered in a home area, actually, like our role play, it's their house. There's a kitchen with some different things that you find in the kitchen, and there's like a living room, and there's a room, and they have some clothes to get dressed up, and then we've added different things throughout the year, of course, but hats and purses, and then babies that we will add soon because it's coming, but we're adding the babies because girls are starting to get interested in that. And then you go like to another area that it's a closed area, but there are big windows and big doors, so and move from one area to another with different problem. And we have literacy area. You continue walking and it is close to Small World. It is close to construction. And then there's the maths area. And if you stand up in all these areas in different ways, there's like a big window and you can see the outdoors where sand and water and the kitchen are. So you can go out and girls, like, it's really amazing to see how they move like throughout the area. And inquiry is near, close by, and they can move throughout the areas with this independence that Julia was mentioning. They know how to move around. We've also like have this idea of like, you can move around the areas and you can bring things from role play if you need them in maths, or you can take things from construction and bring things from, I don't know, Small World to build. And girls are moving around regularly. But also, as you were mentioning, this has been a process, because at the beginning of the year, when they start, we have to show them how to use the areas and how to move around.
Yes, it's about introducing it well. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I was going to ask you, Jimena, you mentioned, didn't you, that Phil, my colleague, Phil Armstrong, came over and has worked with you a lot, I know, and I know he loves coming over to see you. I was interested to know, you know, when, and any of you could answer this really, but when he came over, did he get you to think about the learning environment? Did he get you to think about, did he challenge your thinking? Did he get you to think about the layout of the space, for example, you know, how the space is organized? Have you changed it because of some of the things that, you know, he asked questions about?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. It was a very interesting opportunity to rethink the learning environments that we were setting. He's a very knowledgeable person, but he was also very proactive in moving the furniture himself. Like he said, for example, in preschool, just to give a little bit of context, different than nursery, we have our our space is circular. So all the classes are around the center and all the areas are in the center of the preschool building. So we used to have creative area in the middle of the classes. And creative tend to be very loud. And he said, like, why don't you put it to the side? And it was such like a easy idea, but we didn't think about that. You know, he said, like, you can use the walls for vertical painting instead of, you can have easels, but you can also use the wall. You are closer to the bathroom. He's like, now that I say it, it might sound like silly because you could say, like, why didn't you think about it? But you really can't, in a sense that you're used to do something in a way and it works. And it did work before, but he just offered an opportunity to think and or rethink and reorganize things in a way that it was made better sense. You know,
I think when you're surrounded by it all of the time, you know, I work with people all the time who it's, and I think everybody's been there where you are, if you are in the same room day in, day out, every single day, you have it set up in a particular way, it can be difficult sometimes to see beyond where it currently is, you know, and sometimes it takes another person coming in with a new pair of eyes to look at it and say, you know, you could do with that area being over there because then X, Y, and Z, because then there is a reason for why, you know, why it's there. So like the paint and the workshop being near to where the bathroom is and next to the wall so that you can create a vertical painting surface. These are all good reasons for why you would do it. But it's having the reasons behind it, I think, that are really important.
He set something in motion, you know, but because the year after that, he wasn't here. And we had to set up the areas again. And even though it worked, we chose to move creative area to the outdoor areas. You know, like, just because it made sense for us again. And what Phil did is he just moved our comfort zone. You know, that just like he knew that the things were very comfortable because they worked. And it wasn't wrong, but it could be better. It could be, and not even better, just different. And different was great. And so now our areas are in constant movement, depending on how the girls interact there. As I said before, preschool is a circular area. So there's not like a lot of things that we can move around because we're containing the space. But I think that something very positive about preschool, because the circularity of the building itself, it promotes a very beautiful interaction. It keeps us together. And you see that during the play.
And you do see that the way that an early years environment is organized, it changes the flow of the room. So the way that children move around the room, but it also changes the way that they will interact with the other children within the space. So if you create a very big space, children will usually run through it and run around within it. Create smaller, kind of more enclosed spaces, more corners and bays, and you're likely to get children in smaller groups, working together, starting to work alongside one another, and then beginning to collaborate and then beginning to share ideas. But the layout of the space, the organization of the space, it prompts that quite often. It helps that to happen. So I think that's a really interesting starting point. I think it's a starting point that I think we tend to do a lot when we visit schools, whether that be overseas, international schools like yourselves, or whether that be in the UK, that's something we talk about a lot, is that idea of getting the layout right, first of all, because such a lot comes from it in terms of the learning behaviours and also, as you say, the interactions as well. That's really interesting.
It's a mood, right? And I think it's a very nice thought that our play environment is a space, it's a physical space where our girls get together. Like they really can, they are expecting their continuous probation moment because they know that it would be a time and place to meet with their friends from other classes, or friends that perhaps they didn't work together during the day. So it's a very special and unique moment when they encounter, you know, like, and it's very affective and it's very nice and playful and it's an opportunity to showcase their development, you know, like the social emotional development, their language skills, all the concepts that they are grasping and they are constantly sharing. Then I think that speaking of the independence that Julia and Christy were saying, like the sense of belonging that they build in school, making an example, we had a new girl coming in on Monday and the girls did the tour because it's their environment. So here's the attraction, sand and water. What we do here is this. If you need to wash something, you have to go over there. If you want to go to my kitchen, you should get your apron from here. You can go around here. This is another way. They did that. So it's very nice to see how they built this, again, sense of belonging, because it's actually what the school fosters and has fostered all along with Christy and I and Julia herself. We are all ex-alumnas from here. And I think that we can all say that when we were students, we created a sense of belonging here to school as well. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. Like, we really love school. And it's great to see that what we lived is something that has been sustained throughout all the school's life. It is something that we feel very proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. What comes across, I think, really clearly is that what you're talking about here are two strands, that the impact of the work that you have done is, you can see it in the children's learning and development. So you can see it in, for example, their engagement with the materials and the resources and the learning, the things that they do with those materials, but that you can also see it in their characteristics of effective learning. So those attributes, those learning attributes that run alongside the learning process. So the resilience, the having their own ideas and carrying those ideas out, problem solving, those sorts of opportunities to work something out, to try something out, to test it out, the playing with what they know. So coming back to things and playing with what they know already and building on it. All of those sorts of things, those key attributes around learning are so important. And children take joy from the learning process. You know, one of the characteristics of effective learning is children enjoy achieving what they have set out to do, which I think is such an important characteristic. And it's not something that you can just put in front of them. So, you know, going back to what you were saying at the beginning, you know, that kind of model of putting out resources for this week and putting out activities for this week, it's not something that usually leads to children developing resilience and confidence and that sense of autonomy and independence and all of those characteristics, nor does it lead to them usually enjoying achieving what they have set out to do in quite the same way as if they have their own plan. So it's really, really interesting that you've seen that journey and you've seen the difference in the children, the impact on the children, both in terms of the learning, but also, I think, in terms of those characteristics of effective learning that, of course, stand them in such good stead for the rest of their learning journey throughout school. Yeah, really important, isn't it?
Yes, and and I think all the things you're saying are totally true. And we see it, like, in nursery, like, they are the girls, not the youngest ones in the school, that it's the first time they're in school. And it's amazing seeing, like, how all these things start like emerging and start developing throughout the year. And like they, at the beginning, you know, as we always say, like, it's simple things, like everything is on the floor and we have to model them how to clean up and how to tidy up and how to leave the areas. And then they start knowing the materials, they start to know how to use them, they start learning that, and they start planning what they are going to do the next day, and they can sit down and they can turn around to their friends, and before going to continuous provision is, okay, let's go to this area to do this, this, and this. So it's amazing to see that. And then they say, okay, can I go back tomorrow to continue doing this, and I will finish this, or okay, I will finish tomorrow because I know it will be there. Like, I know it will be there and that I can continue exploring, and all, like, being everything, every, we try to do it, not every day or every week, like more complex for each specific girl. But it's amazing to see how this grows, like the first months of school, and they, then they're ready. They're ready to go.
Skyrocketing.
Absolutely. Such an exciting journey.
I was going to tell that, well, now I am in preschool, but a few years ago, when we started implementing continuous probation, when Phil came first, I was a grade one teacher. And I could see how the girls got, well, you can, it's really evident how they get to grade one and they know how everything works. They can make connections. They are so dependent and so knowledgeable of the continuous probation areas. They know what role play is. They know what they can do there. They know the possibilities. They understand also the rules of the environment, like the agreements that we have, like taking care of things, leaving it for the next group because we all go in different in time frames. And you can, like, I was trying to make the link between nursery girls when they arrive to school and the journey they make from March to December and the journey they make from nursery to grade one, it's similar, you know, like in the sense that they are deepening their understanding, they are being more independent, they have more autonomy, they develop the critical thinking, the creative thinking, they plan ahead. And when you see it with the girls that are 7-year-olds, like 4 years later of continuous probation, you can really spot, like you can go into a class to observe a continuous probation session and you can really see which girls that were, which one was here from nursery that had their 4 years of continuous probation and when which girl has arrived to school like a couple of years ago or maybe recently. Because you know the way that they move around the continuous probation, the way that they use their continuous probation, it's amazing the difference between someone that has built their, you know, their sense of continuous probation from the beginning of the early years journey and a one that someone that has just arrived recently, you know, and
yeah. It's incredible to listen to you both, to all three of you talking about the development of the space. It really is. And what comes across, I think, is that you've got such a spring in your step in terms of talking about your practice. You know, you're so positive about it, which is brilliant. You know, you're positive about where you're at. You're positive about the steps that you have taken to get to where you are currently and the impact on the children. You can see it. And not just this year, but over time you are seeing it, which is, I think, is brilliant. It's absolutely wonderful. I was going to ask you one more thing, if that's all right, if we've time for one more question. I was going to ask you about basically what comes next, because you've got such a buzz, I think, amongst your team in terms of what you're wanting to do. There's a real celebration there of what you've achieved so far. So I was going to ask you basically, you know, what's next for you? What's next for you in terms of the team? How are you going to build on the progress that you've made in terms of developing the environment?
Well, I think there's always room and space to keep on improving. We've moved incredibly, not we, I'm saying we, but it's not we, it's Christina, her team, Jimena and her team. You know, they've moved incredibly. And the fact that both of them work hand in hand, I also think that's something that works incredibly because they're in constant communication and they are learning together all the time. And then this trickles down to the teachers, trickles down to the teaching assistants, also trickles down because we've got technicians that also support. But I think we've also moved on, and this is also done. Jimena mentioned grade one, which would be year two. So we do have a continuous provision within our year one and year two year groups. I think that we need to tweak it better. That's in my vision, my personal vision, tweak it better and make it more of an enhanced provision for them and making it more led towards what they are learning so that they can have those immediate connections. And also more probably still more meaningful interactions with the teachers and the teaching assistants in the older groups, not the younger ones where Christina and Jimena are, but with the older groups. You know, they are incredibly independent, the children, but I think that we still need to have more meaningful interactions and continue introducing more questioning techniques, and the children also. Let's not forget that they're learning through English. So there's also that vocabulary, that vocab that to work on. So that's where we enhance that. That was my opinion. But I've got Jimena and I've got Christina here because they might have different points of views, which is great.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, over to you.
With what Julia was saying, yes, for sure, like adult interactions, I think we've come like a long way, but there are still things that we need not to continue like learning and experiencing and trying, actually like trying with the little ones and see what works best for them and try to have like more strategies and more resources to do this, like connecting ideas and asking questions. And I think we've made a great job like connecting like our curriculum with what we're doing in continuous provision. So that has helped us like create these interactions and these connections. So we are doing like, I don't know, for example, reading a book, The Enormous Carrot. We just started The Enormous Carrot and we've added some things in the mad kitchen and some vegetables and in inquiry. And this helped us, I think, the teachers and the adults to try to make these connections and be there with the girls and ask questions and introduce vocabulary. But that's something that I think it's like ongoing process.
Absolutely. It takes time, doesn't it, to build that. And also I think it's not a quick fix. It's not something you can just do physically and to, you know, bring resources in or move furniture around. That's relatively quick in that you can move it physically. With interactions, of course, that's about the staff team. It's about their understanding. It's about their understanding of the children and child development, first of all. Secondly, it's about their understanding of these children in terms of what they've learned before and what they've done before and their prior experiences at home or elsewhere. It's also alongside that, it's about staff having the skills and the techniques to be able to engage with the children. And sometimes that's about what we say, but at the same time, that's sometimes about actually how we engage using our, you know, body language. You know, the closeness, how we respond to the children, even before we're talking. So that idea of mirroring and copying and being part of what the children are doing and showing that actually we're interested in what they're doing, this all helps to build up a culture where you are going to get interaction thriving. It's all where the children feel valued, where actually they're going to respond to what you are saying, but also you're responding to what they're saying. And it's a back and forth interaction that is what we're looking for. But you're well on the way to that. You know, from what you're saying, you're well on the way to that, I'm sure.
And I just wanted to add there that something that we can, thinking of this question, you know, like what's next for us? I think that... just like what Christy was saying, right? Like the enhancements and the opportunities that we have there. I think that working together with other organizations outside from school also has been a great opportunity, even though it's not like something that will sustain over time in continuous provision. When we're focusing on something curricular, for example, we did the Very Hungry Caterpillar in preschool, and the kids were very interested in butterflies and in the process of the metamorphosis of the changing from being caterpillars onto butterflies. And we called an organization here in Peru that is called Urban Butterflies. And they came and they did this consultancy with us. And they helped us implement the inquiry area because being very humble, like we are teachers that we maybe not know something about a topic, and asking for help from other specialists within school or outside of school is very important to enrich our learning environments. And what they did with our inquiry areas, it's something that perhaps the team by ourselves, maybe we would have not achieved as much. And I think like asking for support.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You're modeling that, aren't you?
Yes.
Yourself.
The school, like for example, what Julia was saying, like Christy being the curriculum, the EYFS coordinator, like I, even though we work hand in hand, I also go to her to ask for her opinion and her perspective and vice versa. And I think like asking for help within our community of San Silvestre and also extend it to other, you know, parts of our community outside from school has been very empowering and enriching. And
yeah, definitely.
Enjoyed it, and I think that's something that we could continue fostering to improve our learning.
Absolutely. And the other thing to add to that, I think, is that I think the more you go into that learning alongside the children within the provision, the more it becomes a relationship where between the adults and the children, where you don't have to know all of the answers, you don't have to know all of the information. Because actually children will come up with something, they'll say something about dinosaurs or about all sorts of things that you might or you might not know the answer to. And that's actually fine. You don't have to be the font of all knowledge. You don't have to know absolutely everything. But what you do is you have that learning relationship with the children where actually you say, do you know what? Let's find out. I wonder is the word to use, isn't it? I wonder. Yeah, let's think about it. Let's wonder about it together. Let's see if we can find out. That is just as powerful, if not more powerful, than knowing the answer. I think all of the things you're talking about around building those learning relationships within the continuous provision will get you to that point. So yeah, really, really interesting stuff. Jimena and Christina and Julia, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast. It has been wonderful to catch up with you, wonderful to find out about the journey of development at the school. And it's so powerful, really is powerful when you hear about what you've done in terms of the development of the environment with Phil and the work that you've done with Phil, my colleague Phil. But also the impact on the children. It's incredibly powerful. Brilliant to hear all about it. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So there you go. Thank you very much to the team at San Silvestre School for joining us this week. Great to listen to your journey. Really inspirational stuff. And I'm sure people out there will find it a fantastic listen. Thank you very much for joining us out there as well. Those people who've been listening along. Take care, everybody, and have a good week. And we'll see you next time.